Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Welcome to our hosts, Susan Franson and Gina McAndrews. Welcome to you both.
It's great to have you back in Ames, Gina. This will be a very busy morning, and Paul won't be with us. He is convalescing at a neighbor's house after a stroke a couple of weeks ago. He was extremely lucky, as he tells me. He'd been on the phone with a neighbor who recognized from Paul's voice what was happening. As a result, the neighbor called the ambulance in time to get him to Mary Greeley during what Paul calls the golden hour. That's the time that medical assistance can stop the effects of the stroke at the optimum time. I'm happy to report that he arrived soon enough that the stroke didn't affect his speech at all. That's amazing. He's listening to us right now, and I'm sure he's missing the chance to interview Leanne Harder, who's here with us with her Story County Report. On behalf of Paul, welcome to Local Talk, Leanne.
Good morning.
Hello, Leanne.
Hello, Gina. I hope all is well with everyone. And Paul, I know you're out there listening. My best wishes to you for a speedy, healthy recovery. Stay safe. And to everyone out there, I want to start with a message from Story County Emergency Management. You should be aware of what's happening outside possibly today. Story County Emergency Management just wants me to ask everyone to stay weather aware today. Today's weather has the potential to be a very, very dangerous weather system. Be prepared for the possibility of power outages. Take some time this morning and secure anything outside that is not secured so it doesn't become a projectile. And then you can follow Emergency Management on their Facebook page. And at Story County on our Facebook page, we'll do our best to share information as they put it out there. But I'm so in amazement that today is going to be 70 degrees on December 15th. But still stay weather aware. But knowing it is December 15th, I'm going to switch gears and share this message. When we have snow coming, which is inevitable, we're in Iowa and the seasons change, just like flipping a quarter. Give snowplows a break. Driving a snowplow is one of the toughest jobs around. Those snowplow operators maneuver a 27-foot truck with a 10-foot plow while dealing with foggy windows, swirling snow, slippery roads, icy intersections, and just plain everyday traffic. I know what I am trying to drive my car and just winter weather too, and I don't have all those things to have to deal with. So here's some guidelines and some things we ask you to do with snowplows. During snowstorm conditions, those snowplows are actually considered and you need to treat them as an emergency vehicle. They're out there when a lot of us are safe at home. Keep a safe distance when following snowplows. This is critical because snowplows create a swirl of snow that can blind a driver in a car following too closely or even those cars approaching from the opposite direction. Snowplows may also be spreading material as they plow snow. This will help melt snow and ice and provide traction for driving safety. Don't stop too closely behind a snowplow when it is stopped either. That operator may be preparing to back up and just simply may not see you back there if you're too close. Couple more, don't pass a snowplow unless your visibility is perfectly clear and it's completely safe for you, the snowplow driver, and other vehicles. In snow season, patience, as we all know, is very necessary. That snowplow operator is working to provide safe road conditions so that you and your family members and friends can be out there on the roads traveling where you need to go. So with that, keeping in mind today is December 15th, stay snowplow aware, but stay weather aware today. I do want to just talk a little bit and give some thanks to some Story County Board of Health members that have been recently recognized by the Board of Health. Local boards of health, according to the Iowa Code, have jurisdictions over public health matters within designated geographic areas. Local boards of health promote and protect the health of all citizens, carry out powers of local boards as allowed in the Code of Iowa, and any other requirements that the code allows. Two, Board of Health, according to Dr. John Passion, who is currently the chair of the Story County Board of Health, he commented that about two retiring board members. He said, two Board of Health members who have served this county professionally and unselfishly are retiring from the board. They will be missed. And I want to, I've had an opportunity to meet both these individuals too, and they have been very impactful for Story County. So if you know them, send out a thank you. But it is Mark Speck. Mark Speck served from 1995 to 2021 on the Story County Board of Health. An amazing tenure. And then Louisa Tabat, I always mispronounce her name, Tabatabai. Sorry, Louisa, you know I do that every time. From 2019 to 2021. And both will be greatly missed from the Board of Health. January is National Radon Action Month. During the month of January, the Story County Environmental Health Department hopes to increase the public's awareness of the presence of radon in our county. Radon is an odorless and invisible radioactive gas naturally released from the rock, soils, and water. We have it here in Iowa in outdoor environments. Radon levels are very low and generally not considered harmful. But radon can get into homes or buildings through small cracks or holes and build up to higher levels. And breathing in high levels of radon over long periods of time can result in lung cancer. The good news is that lung cancer from radon is preventable. You can test for radon in your home to help prevent unnecessary exposure. You can stop by the Story County Environmental Health Department in Nevada. They're in the lower level of the Story County Administration Building at 900 6th Street. To pick up a radon test kit, they are only $8 and well worth that $8. The first 50 radon kits during the month of January will be at no cost. So in recognition of January as radon month. I do want to just talk a little bit about floodplain regulations and encourage people to reach out if they think they are in the floodplain or know they are and want some additional information. Story County has a long established history of floodplain management programs that includes a review of applications and issuances of permits to record keeping dating back to the mid-80s. And the relationship of floodplain management and hazard mitigation for properties located in unincorporated areas of Story County. So those properties outside city limits within Story County. Our adoptive floodplain management program looks at three aspects. We look at regulations, mapping, and flood insurance. Do you want to note that a floodplain development permit in unincorporated Story County is required before any grading or construction takes place in a flood hazard area? You can contact our county's floodplain manager, who is the director of the Planning and Development Department, at 515-382-7245 with any questions. I encourage you to do that before you invest any time or money in plans and making those improvements on your property. If you want to contact me too, I can get you in touch with our Planning and Development Department too and answer some questions that you may have. I said this a couple months ago, and I'm going to say it because we're going to get some great response. We've started a photo of the week on our Instagram and social media pages. So if you have a favorite place in Story County, send it to storycountyis85@gmail.com. That is, again, storycountyis85@gmail.com to be featured on our social media. And lastly, a reminder that all ATV, ORV, UTV, snow, ORM registrations are up for renewal by the end of the year. To renew, you may bring your VIN or registration number to the Story County Recorder's Office at 900 6th Street in Nevada. And you do need to renew those by December 31st to avoid any penalties. Story County budget planning is underway for fiscal year 2023. We'll be developing the budget over the next few months. Fiscal year 2023 begins July 1st, 2022, and ends then June 30th, 2023. You can check out the website at storycountyiowa.gov to see a schedule of work sessions between the Board of Supervisors, other county elected officials, and department heads to discuss budget requests and priorities. And then upcoming meeting dates and times. ARPA work sessions are December 16th and 17th at 8:30. Those may be viewed online via Zoom or in person. Board of Supervisors meet on the regular meetings every Tuesday at 10 a.m. And those are, the video replays are on YouTube. And then just some holiday closures. We will be closed for the holidays in December on the 24th, the 27th, and the 31st. If you have any questions on online services and information, you can visit Story County online at storycountyiowa.gov. If you're on social media, follow us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and then subscribe to our YouTube channel. And as always, I thank KHOI and all the folks there and all the folks listening for your time, and wish everyone safe weather and stay weather aware this morning and a safe holiday season. And with that, our mission at Story County is to engage our diverse communities to responsibly provide quality opportunities and services that matter. And that is my December 2021 report, the last one for the year.
Wow. Thank you so much, Leanne. We sure appreciate you coming on every month and keeping us informed of everything going on at Story County.
I appreciate the opportunity. I look forward to every month talking to you guys.
All right. Hope you have a wonderful Christmas and holiday and New Year's. And we'll see you next month.
Yep. Best regards to everyone.
Thanks for just tuned in. Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We just got a update from Leanne Harder, and her report was mixed with a little flavor of the courthouse in Nevada as we approach the holidays. I think we'll have some music coming up. What was the unusual music we just heard?
That was Sudanese music by Dot Bull, who was one of the three women who opened a Sudanese restaurant on South Duff called The Safari. We still have that music from the Local Talk program in 2018.
I know you wanted to do a story about immigrants and Ames and how they celebrated Christmas, but I don't know if that was Christmas music, was it?
Well, that's right, but we were supposed to have a daring experiment today with Owen Majik, who a lot of people would know because she ran for the school board and most recently ran for the city council and did a lot of door knocking. And I know through my work on that program that there is a very large Sudanese community in Ames. And I thought since we're going to be introducing a lot of these communities to our listening audience that the Sudanese community was a good one to begin with. So I called Owen, and she was on her way home to Sudan to visit her family there. Like so many people, getting back to your family at this time of the year is a big thing. And last week, she called me from the airport in Ethiopia and said she'd like to Zoom in this week. Earlier this year, we had someone Zoom in from Geneva, so I thought it would be fun to try. I was supposed to send her the Zoom link yesterday, but apparently she couldn't make the connection. But I decided to announce our experiment on the air and let our listeners in on the suspense. and I will share with you that Christmas in Sudan is a huge holiday, starting the week before Christmas and lasting through New Year. And she also had some Sudanese Christmas music. But I guess we'll have to wait for another year for that.
All right. Yes, I used to live nearby a couple of Sudanese families that were super nice. Well, that's a shame, but I guess we'll have to catch up with her later. So what are we going to do instead?
Oh, we have lots going on this morning. We are actually following three stories. One is a part of a series to introduce our listeners to various immigrant communities. That was the piece that we just heard. And that have come to Central Iowa and part of our families. A second is to follow up our story about how the consolidation of news in the traditional Story County papers has opened up opportunities for alternative news sources. We've had a couple of stories about newspapers, and today we have a couple of new ones. Our next guest, Dana James, was a reporter at the Register at the time that Kathy Obradovich was removed as editor of the editorial page of that paper. Earlier, Mark Witherspoon told us how Kathy Obradovich used her background to start an online newspaper, the Iowa Capital Dispatch. Another award-winning reporter from the Register left at the same time. That was Dana James. Hi, Dana. Welcome to Local Talk.
Good morning, Susan. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
I'm looking forward to a very exciting morning. Already a lot is unexpected. And we'd like you to tell us about what you did when you left the Register.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to talk about it. I'm not sure if I was there exactly at the time that Kathy left, but certainly during my 7 years at the Register, I was there while she was working at the Register. So I was there from 1999 to 2006 and left there, had lots of different positions before I started Black Iowa News in May of 2020.
What have you learned about your audience and how to grow it?
Yeah, absolutely. I love to talk about Black Iowa News. First, I want to say Black Iowa News can be found at blackiowanews.bulletin.com. I'm one of two Iowa entities that are publishing off of Facebook's bulletin platform, which is really fantastic. And that has really allowed me to reach a wider audience, and that's doing great. I send out a newsletter twice a week to your email. People can subscribe for free, or they can purchase a paid subscription to receive exclusive content three times a month. Black Iowa News is also active on social media, again, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter. So, you know, in my role as a former newspaper reporter, I received, you know, had great experience working at the Register. And so, you know, everything that I learned there and in positions since there, I'm using to help inform the Black community in Iowa of important, you know, news that's going on. I began Black Iowa News, like I said, May of 2020 during the pandemic, because I saw all these gaps in the reporting, you know, that was happening about the coronavirus pandemic. News reports rarely disaggregated the data by race, which made it very hard to quantify the pandemic's effect on Black Iowans. And some of that is still happening today. You rarely see how the data is affecting Black Iowa. So since the state early on in the pandemic had kind of focused on pushing everyone back to work, I was worried about how Black workers were going to be affected. Black workers were, you know, disproportionately on the front lines. And I named the publication Black Iowa News really to signal my intention to write stories that are meaningful and appealing to Black Iowans, and that really feature us prominently in a way that it wasn't currently happening. But Black Iowa News certainly is available for everyone to read and subscribe to. As you are aware, Susan, Blacks in Iowa face a lot of longstanding disparities. Three cities recently were named on a list of the 20 worst cities for Black Americans by 24/7 Wall Street. And those three cities are Davenport, Des Moines, and Waterloo. And so definitely there's a lot to write about and a lot to cover when it comes to Black Iowans. So I focused a lot of pandemic in terms of sharing data about Blacks in particular. One figure that you don't hear a lot, and that is that more than 116,000 Black Americans have died of COVID-19. And in Iowa, I think the figure is a little over 200 Black Iowans have died, according to health statistics. So, you know, we're obviously still in the throes of the pandemic. It's still, you know, really a threat. So here we are now in December, which is basically a year after the first Iowans received the COVID-19 vaccines. And I'm happy to say that the gap between white and Black Iowans in terms of the rate of COVID-19 vaccinations has narrowed. So white Iowans who have received one dose is 58% compared to 46% for Black Iowans. So that's actually really good news. And then, of course, with the emergence of the highly transmissible Omicron variant, which I wrote about on Sunday, it's more than ever, if I can just put a plug in, it's more than important than ever to get vaccinated and boosted. Plus do all of those other things that we've, you know, been hearing about for almost 2 years now, wearing a mask, washing your hands, social distancing, getting tested, ventilating the rooms that you're in, all of those things that some of us, not all, but some have practiced. So I've written a lot about that. I've also written a lot since Black Iowa News began about the work of activists after the murder of George Floyd. I've written about Jill Wells, a brilliant artist, and the gorgeous murals that she has created in Des Moines and Iowa City. Last summer, I received a Black Press grant from the National Association of Black Journalists to write a 3-part series. It was called Unprotected, and it was a deep dive into how the pandemic affected Black Iowans, about vaccines and bias in healthcare. Now, some of the recent stories that you'll find if you go to blackiowanews.bulletin.com, you're going to see stories about Ross Wilburn, the chair of the Iowa Democratic Party, who is also a state rep from Ames, and his fascinating connection to a Black Iowa Civil War veteran, his great-great-grandfather, Harrison Tilford Gash. And so recently, I shadowed Ross when he went to a trip to the State Historical Building to see that Civil War battle flag. It was from 1863. It was created by Black women from Keokuk and Muscatine for the 1st Colored Regiment of Iowa, which is the 60th U.S. Colored Infantry. And that flag, it represents Ross's great-great-grandfather's regiment. And it was the first time that he saw the flag up close. It was the second time that I saw the flag. It's a really beautiful flag, and I was just floored that Black women in 1863 in Iowa were the architects of this flag. So it's really awesome through Black Iowa News to get to write about this kind of untold, overlooked Black history, Iowa history, American history that, you know, as a lifelong Iowan, I knew nothing about. So that's been really awesome. The State Historical Society of Iowa also has this regular series that features the history of Iowans. And a historian from the University of Iowa, Dwayne Coleman, he had highlighted how Black Civil War veterans in Iowa, you know, after the war had moved to cities like Newton and Des Moines and how they built these vibrant communities. And so through Black Iowa News, I've been writing about these discoveries that really came from the work that Ross was doing in his genealogy research. And it's really fascinating how he had the discovery of this distant relative that led to all these cool facts that he has now in his ancestry. And so I've written about that quest a couple times. I've also written about critical race theory, and that is something, you know, Susan, that's a hot topic. The King Center held a training with Bernice King, which is the daughter of civil rights icon Martin Luther King Jr. and other experts, to really do a deep dive into what CRT is and to clarify it, since so many people have it wrong. Last week, I featured a story about Lou Spain, and she is the owner of Zumi Collection, which is a business that's been on the west side of Des Moines for 20 years. Zumi sells women's clothing and accessories from Africa, Asia, and South America. Lou is very well traveled. She's been to dozens of countries in search of merchandise, and she sells some items that are certified free trade. Lou also has a clothing line that's manufactured in Thailand. And in the piece that I wrote about her, she shared her wisdom for aspiring business owners. So I plan to continue writing more of these types of stories that may not, you know, make what I would call legacy media entities, but in a independent media venture like Black Iowa News, you know, I'm able to kind of give that coverage to people who don't make the newspaper all of the time or don't make the newscast all of the time. So some of the things that I have coming up, I'm working on an explainer about the Democratic caucuses, which will be held in February. And I'm illustrating how people can participate in the different roles that are available, like through their precincts and central committees, and really trying to explain how that process works for people who may be unfamiliar with it or people who, you know, might have felt left out. Going into the new year, I also plan to continue a series that I'm working on that is doing a deep dive into Black communities around the state. And it's allowing people who live there to talk about the challenges and triumphs in their particular areas, so that we, you know, over time, we get to have this kind of unique look about Black Iowans across the state. I've already written one about Dubuque, and so I'm going to be working my way kind of around the state for that. So the goal is really ultimately with Black Iowa News is to build a sense of community. It's to share our challenges and share our triumphs and to give people a voice who have traditionally not been heard. So on Facebook recently, I started a group. It's called Inside Black Iowa, and anyone can join, and I welcome anyone to do that. In there, we talk about, you know, stories that might have made the headline that are of particular appeal to Black Iowans. But we also talk about fun things like what's your favorite Christmas movie, what's your favorite Christmas activity. So, again, with the goal of kind of building that community, giving people another way to interact with Black Iowa News, giving people just another way to be seen and heard. Speaking of kind of social media, I also, on the Facebook page for Black Iowa News, which I believe is at Black Iowa News, I also share the latest headlines of interest, Black stories from lots of different media entities. So if you're wanting a way to kind of stay abreast of what's going on with the Black community, what issues are important, what's being talked about, I invite you to, you know, check out the Facebook page for Black Iowa News. But if I have time, I would love to talk a little bit more about, you know, what my priorities are for Black Iowa News. And that is finding and quoting Black sources, elevating the voice of Black Iowans, writing stories with the latest data about Black Iowans prominently displayed, photographing Black Iowans, and really focusing in on some of the key issues affecting Black Iowans, like I said, I've, you know, written about, you know, a wide variety of issues from, you know, COVID-19 to activism, just a wide cross section. And so I really invite people to, visit the website and kind of look through some of the stories that I've written. And then also, you know, as I've stated, you know, Iowa has kind of some really serious inequities and, you know, so some of the issues that Black Iowa News addresses, some of the categories that I'm particularly interested in include health, prisons, employment, legislative, education, housing, justice, racial profiling, environmental justice, business, gun violence, and, you know, other human interests, like Black businesses. So essentially Black Iowa News is an independent media venture, and I invite your listeners to subscribe and, you know, help Black Iowa News meet its year-end subscription goals. Black Iowa News, but we also have a monthly subscription of $6.99 or it's
we're not allowed to use.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Money, names of money.
Oh, sure.
And including that four letter word you used.
The who word? Subscribe or, you know, like I said, it's free. It's really, like I said, about creating a community around these important topics. And so that's what I'm about.
Oh, wow. Well, I was hoping to bring you on and actually and with a regular time slot because about a little over a year ago when Mike and I covered the Black Lives Matter march in Boone, which was enormously successful, and 250 people in Boone showed up for that. Aja Lyons, who was one of the organizers, said, KHOI is diversity radio. And I thought, that's great. I didn't ever think that we had done a terrific job up to that point, but it's a goal. And so I think bringing on the issues that you find in for Black Iowa News would be a great addition to KHOI also. And so thank you so much. It's a little overwhelming, all that you're doing. But we're hoping for lots more stories, lots more connections.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. Thank you.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and we've just been talking with Dana James about her online publication, Black Iowa News, and how it contributes to improving understanding of and by Black Iowans. Turning to different publications, we have an interview with Craig Schultz, editor of two weekly papers, By and For Iowans.
We were talking about the Ogden Reporter very favorably a couple of weeks ago and congratulating it and you on the small town feel and the real small town coverage, which is being lost by a lot of the newspapers owned by Gannett. And so we wondered how you manage. What's your secret?
I don't know if there's really any secret to it. It's just trying to connect, you know, with a smaller community and doing the best you can. There's not always, you know, that big story going on. Sometimes it's just a bunch of small things here or there. There's, you got your city governments, your school boards, and your small town athletics are so important in these towns like Ogden. So I don't know if there's a secret. It's just doing the best you can for the people that you represent as a newspaper.
Well, yes, but it's one thing to want to do the best you can. It's another thing to have the means to do that. Really, I gathered when I talked to Matt Groh that there are a number of papers that are published in Hampton. And so I just wanted to know, really sort of from the business side, you know, how this works.
Well, I'm just a simple editor. You know, the business side is something I don't focus on a whole lot, but I know, like, our big, you know, our one of the taglines we have to talk about is, you know, we're just Iowans making newspapers for Iowans. And I think that really helps our business go a long ways, because in business, I feel like you need to build up trust. And, you know, Iowans are more apt to trust Iowans than, you know, your Gannets of the world, where they outsource a bunch of jobs or they just close down different newspaper offices just all willy-nilly. Mid-America Publishing is just all Iowa-based, I believe.
All Iowa-based.
Yep.
And do you communicate with each other? Do you have newspaper meetings?
Oh, we have, usually we have one or two company meets on a Google Meet a week. We have biweekly editors meetings. Our marketing consultants have, you know, meetings a lot of the time. You know, we're in constant communication. It'll be via email, phone calls, Google chats, Google Meets. So yeah, we try to make it tight knit, and everyone helps each other out. You know, if one paper's having problems, some other folks from other papers will go we'll go ahead and help you out. So it's kind of like a family atmosphere with our newspaper company and printing business.
Well, I also noticed that you're online. Now, what I'm used to with online is just the newspaper online. I noticed that when I went online, I found references to IPBS and other sources for local stories. And, of course, I noticed also that in your print version, you used Iowa Capital Dispatch, which is a wonderful source of really good news. So I wondered about, for example, the PBS, how you work that.
You know, PBS, they just send out press releases via a service. And to me, everyone can watch a PBS documentary, and I think they have some really interesting stuff. So, you know, if PBS sends us something interesting, I'll go ahead and run that, because, again, PBS is pretty widely available to everyone in the state with the television. So that's why I kind of like using PBS, just because we just got it off a press release service for what they show.
Are there any other things that you and your other editors have discovered to share?
You know, like I said, sometimes, you know, we'll share stories we write. We'll share columns that we write. You know, we have a couple writers in our company that do a company-wide column that we can run. And, you know, it's up to every paper, you know, if we want to run it or not. You know, so we have a lot of content sharing. We'll give each other tips and tricks, you know, if there's someone kind of new. But, you know, for me, for what I do, if I get a good press release, I'll use it from if it's good and local. And Iowa Capital Dispatch is just such a great source of information that can be applied locally and statewide.
I noticed also that you always have a couple of articles that you write, an editorial and often a local news story. And that's pretty standard for other papers also?
Yep. You know, none of our papers have huge staffs. So, you know, we're out there finding stories, you know, trying to get to city council, you know, city government meetings, school board meetings. Some of us, you know, even cover sports, you know, just as a single editor, because, you know, I cover Ogden and Madrid both by myself. And, you know, sometimes it's a little difficult figuring out, you know, what to go to. But yeah, I mean, our editors are just a phenomenal bunch of writers that just show so much commitment to helping out smaller communities with the news and all the other coverage.
Does Madrid have its own paper?
Yep, that is the Madrid Register News, and then there's the Ogden Reporter. So I am the editor for both those papers.
And so that means you have to go to two city council meetings and two school board meetings.
Oh, I recently struck up with Madrid a way to go to their city council meetings via recording, so that kind of frees up some time. School boards are difficult because, you know, they run the same time about every month on a Monday, so it's kind of a pick and choose. And, you know, so sometimes it's just like I said earlier, you've got to kind of, I have to pick and choose what I'm going to go do because I'm the only one, and sometimes you got to just make that tough decision and hope it's the right decision.
Say, last week, we had a story about the Nevada Journal Building, which is being restored, but as a brew pub restaurant, I guess. But before that, it was no longer being used for the newspaper. I don't know exactly when it was retired, but do you have the original newspaper building?
No. The Ogden Reporter, you know, used to be just based solely in Ogden. Now both papers are run out of Madrid, and we're in an old, I think it's like a, it used to be a dentist office, used to be an apartment, so this building we're in has been used for a lot. So, no, we're not in any kind of original building, and I'm not sure of what the original building for either paper is like.
Well, it sounds like you are a very, very busy man, and I appreciate your making time for me, and we'll...
It feels weird being on this side of the interview, Colleen, because usually I'm the one asking the questions, so it's kind of weird being on the other side.
Okay. Well, wrapping up today's show, we'll return to Nevada, which we visited a lot lately, both as the county seat of Story County and as a bustling main street with lots going on. With a ribbon cutting for a dramatic new workspace, it's time to look at a historic mainstay of the downtown, the 50-year-old Ben Franklin. Let's listen to the manager of the store, Sheila Smith, telling us about the challenges of the past 2 years.
Our recent programs, we've been talking about the big changes that are taking place on Main Street in Nevada. But you have a unique distinction of having a business that has been successfully operating for 50 years.
Yes, this is our 50th Christmas, believe it or not.
Okay. So that's a lot to celebrate.
It has been. We had a big to-do Saturday night here on Main Street. The Main Street Committee threw a huge open house, and we just had a great time all the way up and down Main Street. It was an awesome evening.
Did they include your 50th anniversary in the celebration?
Yes, we had cake, and we had an elf here in the store. They had different characters all over Main Street. They had Olaf and the Grinch and Santa, of course, and then elves. So, yeah, it was fun.
Now, did you stay open during the pandemic?
Yes, we did. Every single day of it.
Wow. And the street construction.
Every single day of it. It was a long 2 years.
But
the funny thing about this whole situation was the week that the contractors pulled up on Main Street to start this 2 year adventure, shall we say, was within 2 days of shutdown of the pandemic. So it was the most interesting time we had ever been through here in the store. And I lost a lot of employees who, of course, didn't want to work with the public, which we totally understood. And it was just, there were days it was almost a ghost town, but we felt obligated to stay open for people who needed that connection to things and didn't want to go to the bigger cities. And they just wanted to stay home and get their things. So we plugged along one day at a time until it was another month, another month, another month, and then soon it was a year. So, yeah, it was interesting.
Well, I just saw something that I've never seen before. Out my dining room window, while I was waiting to make this call, a truck pulled up, or actually turned the corner, and it said Ben Franklin on it. Now, is that connected to your store in any way?
No. Not that I know of.
So you've got a competing new.
Well, I think that's the Benjamin Franklin Plumbing.
Oh.
Yes, we get calls once in a while. Can you come clean my drains? It's like, ooh, I think you've got the wrong people.
Well, my impression of Ben Franklin is it's a place you could go to get things you can't get anyplace else.
We have that reputation, yes. We do have that reputation. It's because we carry everything people need. What your grandma needed, what your mom needed. So we go back a long ways. We like to say we're vintage because we are, not only the store, but a lot of the employees.
What are you? I didn't catch the word. What are you?
Vintage.
Oh, vintage. Yes.
We're vintage. We're not old. We're vintage.
Well, of course, in other towns like Austin, they have new stores that are vintage that only sell old things.
Yes, yes, and yes. There's a few Ben Franklins around the state still, and they're all independently owned, so you will see different things in different stores depending on who owns them and what area it is. Something new in every one of them.
So is there anything special for Christmas to buy between now and the 24th?
Well, now's the time people are going to start wrapping things up with stocking stuffers and batteries. Batteries are a big one. It's going to get a little chillier now, so the mittens and the hats are starting to roll out. And we've got those animals that kids love called Squishimals. So we just got those in. We've been waiting since March to see those, and they finally have been coming in. So those have been very popular.
Yeah, I bet there's no place else in Nevada where you can buy Squishimals.
No, I wouldn't imagine there is. No, not in Nevada.
So what are some of the other things that are particularly popular right now? I guess people need wrapping paper.
Wrapping paper and supplies for that. And then we've got a lot of Christmas glitz and glamour lanterns that sparkle and you turn on and they glow. That's been very popular. Some of the clothing, the Christmas leggings and the Christmas shirts have been very popular, and always the Melissa and Doug toys. We have a pretty big toy department, so that's, of course, very popular right now. And the regular socks and T-shirts and things like that that you tend to put in stockings for the kids or moms or dads. So those are selling, too, right now.
Well, I have something that I have used to be very easy for me to find, and now there are very few stores I can go to get candles, tapers for my Advent candle holder or my candles for my dining room table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's been a toughie before, but we carry those tapers and the Advent candles also. And the votives Christmas lights and all that good stuff.
Okay, now you did say there's also a special candle holder we first found in Sweden, and then we had trouble finding the candles for it. They're little candles.
Those little tiny white ones?
Yes.
Yes, those have been elusive this year. I have not found those this year. No, I have got them in years past, but this year, for some reason, I haven't seen them. There's a couple different items that we just are not seeing this year, and I think it's because of the shortage and they kind of got pushed to the back. So maybe we'll show up again next year, I hope. I just, in the last week and a half, got my big supply of Christmas lights, stringing lights for Christmas trees and stuff. So some things are running late. Some things I'm not going to be able to get at all. But we've been very, very lucky because, like I said, my actual order date for most of my merchandise was March. I think the cutoff was March 15th because our suppliers saw this coming. They knew we were going to be struggling for supplies. So they were on their toes, and we got a lot of ours ordered way back then.
In a town the size of Nevada, I imagine some people could leave their names. So when you got these things in, you could give them a call. Have you been able to do that?
Yes, yes, yes. We have a few things we're still waiting for people. And, yep, we hope to get them hooked up with those items before Christmas.
So now you said you lost employees during the pandemic.
Correct.
Were you able to rehire them later, or did you have to find somebody else?
Well, we've got a couple new gals, and they kind of replaced a few of the ones that we lost. We are not back up to as busy as we would normally have been 4 or 5 years ago because of the construction and the pandemic. So as time goes on, I hope that we're busy, and if I need to hire for spring, we carry bedding plants, and that's always a big time for us. So we'll see how winter goes, and hopefully we'll be able to add a few employees by then.
Well, it sounds like you're going to have a pretty merry Christmas there at Ben Franklin.
I think we are. It's so nice because people are getting out. They seem to be in jolly spirits, and they're really embracing their own communities for all it's worth. They have been very good with us and for us. So we love our people, and that's why we're here.
Well, that's a great commendation of Nevada and of Ben Franklin. Thank you so much.
You betcha. And you have a Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Bye.
Oh, there's no place like home for the holidays. For no matter how far away you roam, when you long for the sunshine of a friendly gate, for the holidays you can't beat home, sweet home. I met a man who Pennsylvania and some homemade pumpkin pie. From Pennsylvania, folks are traveling down to Dixie's sunny shore. From Atlantic to Pacific, gee, the traffic is terrific. Oh, there's no place like home for the holidays. 'Cause no matter how far away you roam, if you want be happy in a million ways. For the holidays, you can't be home, sweet home.
Oh, there's no place like home for the holidays.
'Cause no matter how far away you roam, if you want to be happy.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Remember, you can also hear this program online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The opinions of our guests are not necessarily those of KHOI. Today's guests were Leanne Harder with the Story County Report, Dana James, publisher of Black Iowa News, Craig Schultz, editor of the Ogden Reporter, and Sheila Smith, manager of Ben Franklin in Nevada.
Due to new programs added to the KHOI schedule, Local Talk will not be rebroadcast at 7 p.m. At that time, you can listen to The Moccasin Tracks, a Native American program. At noon, you can hear a rebroadcast of Capital Week with Laura Bellin and Dennis Hart, originally aired Monday evening at 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests along with relevant information to today's stories.
Local Talk is engineered by our interim station manager, Michael Murphy, who is also a silent co-host, troubleshooting Zoom emergencies. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards, from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was a Sudanese song sung by Dot Ball, and There's No Place Like Home for the Holidays by the Carpenters. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! At the top of the hour. Morning Masterpieces will follow at 9 a.m.
If you enjoyed the show, please tell all your friends. Remember, your participation as a listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. If you want to become a member, you can go to our website at khoifm.org and hit the yellow Donate and Become a Member button. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.